The subject of this talk is to give you a larger overview, introduction to the five hindrances. And they are considered to be an extremely important topic maybe still to some degree, but when I was teaching at Spirit Rock and in that whole environment, it was pretty standard for every retreat to have a hindrance talk. And we don't quite do that here at IRC, but you know, here we have a whole hindrance retreat focused on it. So the idea of giving a talk every retreat is because the hindrances are extremely common human phenomena, and they are a big part of what we're contending with when we're trying to wake up, when we're trying to be present and mindful. And they get in the way of being present because they have a way of either pulling us into some kind of thought or fantasy, or they somehow either agitate the mind or depress the mind so much that that we can't really put our attention into being mindfully present. And so in that regard, the hindrances can be seen as being rather unfortunate, as obstacles, and as problems. And you can certainly do it that way if you'd like, but it usually doesn't help your meditation to see them as problems, or even to see them as obstacles, or even see them as hindrances. It's better to take them as natural phenomena that you can expect, and that the task of a meditator is to learn how to be present with them, not present without them. How to wake up, how to have such presence and such clarity of knowing and recognition, such strong mindfulness, that you could actually see the hindrances so clearly that you're not caught in their web. You're not pulled and swept away in them and lost for minutes or hours in them. And by doing that, by turning towards them and really looking at them and using them as the basis for waking up, one of the purposes of that is we can learn their tricks. We can learn how they work in us. We can learn how they're stimulated, how they arise. We can learn how they to work with them and the messages and how they grab our attention, how we get tricked into being concerned with them and caught by them. And that's kind of the ins and outs of the hindrances. And that's really a huge task of mindfulness meditators, is to become an expert on how the hindrances work for you. And each person, they work differently. And because the wiser you become about the hindrances, the less you'll be caught by them, the less they'll pull you off and cause problems for you. So it's a rather bad news to tell you that the very thing that you've been struggling with, that's the obstacle to your practice, and you've been trying to get rid of and not have there so you can meditate, is in some ways important subject of the meditation. We study it. So we don't actually, formally with a letter of, we don't invite the hindrances, try to bring them on. So we don't send out a letter of invitation. But if they come, then welcome them. But welcome them in a particular way, which is welcome them as a field of study, as a place to work with and all that. Maybe because we're here in Santa Cruz, I've been thinking about the hindrances and surfing, mindfulness and surfing. For those of you who might have surfed, it's a pretty great feeling to have caught the wave, to be on the wave, have caught the wave, and you're kind of like just, you're right on top of the wave, kind of, and you're standing there, and it's like you and the contact with the wave is like, and being carried by it is so precious and so kind of particular, and just, everything has to line up just right, just to be there. And then, then sometimes you fall in. And sometimes there's a big wave washes over you, all in the white water and wash in the foam and all that for a while. And that's like the hindrances. You've fallen in. And we get lost in all the thoughts and all the ideas and feelings, and sometimes it can take a long time to be tossed around, tumble around in underwater, in the water. But there's not really a lot of clarity there. And we're not like free, we're not in the, you know, we're not on the wave. The task is to get back on the surfboard and kind of reestablish ourselves in the present moment. And to the feeling of catching the present moment, you know, present moment is a kind of a delicate thing. It's, you know, it doesn't last long. It's just here, then it's gone. Then there's another present moment, then another present moment. But to catch the present, to stay in the now, to stay in the flow and the continuity of things coming and going in the present, and kind of ride it, is one of the great pleasures of life, to finally, you know, wow, I'm here, this is good. And there's actually a lot of pleasure that can come when the mindfulness is really kind of in the groove, or is, you know, here in the present. But I find it very meaningful to think of this present moment as just a sliver. It's just like such a precious little tip of the wave. We can ride it and be with it. And then the hindrances come along and knock us over, and we are underwater, and we have to task us to get it back up again. And so remembering to get back on your surfboard is a big task. I once spent 3 days in a hindrance of desire, and I just couldn't shake it. 3 days, it was on retreat. You know, it was kind of exhausting to spend that long, you know, just same, you know, just like, it was like, it had me, if I don't take responsibility for it, or I had it or something, or we had each other. And I just went on and on, God, give me a break. And so they can last for a while, these things. They can also have a huge impact on our lives, and because we can make decisions based on them and then later regret them. They kind of provide kind of a false view of things if we see through them. The analogy for the hindrances the Buddha gave is that the first one, desire, sensual desire, if they really have you, it's like wearing rose-colored glasses. It's like putting a red dye in water. And if you look at for your reflection in the water, you see everything red. So you don't quite see it as it is, but you see it colored. The aversion or ill will, the second hindrance, is likened to boiling water. And there also you can't see your reflection, you can't see clearly. Sloth and torpor is like the water filled with algae. And it just, you can't make your way through it. And also you can't see very well, it's hard to take the algae out. It's kind of like dense. And sloth and torpor, restlessness and anxiety, or restlessness and worry, regret, is wind-churned water. You know, just lots of wind whipping up the water. And then again, you can't see reflection in the water. And doubt is the water filled with mud. And also, you can't make your way through very easily. It's all muddy and gunky, and you can't, you can't see anymore. You can't see your reflection, or you can't see through the water. So there's a lack of clarity in the water. And so that's what happens to the mind with these things, that it infects how we see things. And so then we see a certain way, and then we, you know, if we really get strong, we can make decisions about it. I remember Sylvia Borstein once telling a story at a retreat. It's the first person I heard use this term, I don't know if she coined it, a multiple hindrance attack. And she said all five hindrances came and took over. And so I forget the details of the story, but she was in the middle of a long retreat, maybe a 3-month retreat, and she decided that she had to leave and got a plane ticket, left, was on the plane back to California from IMS in Massachusetts, and sitting there in the plane halfway across the country, she realized, oh no, that was a multiple hindrance attack. that she'd succumbed to it. It grabbed her, took over, and she made this huge decision to leave the retreat and be on the plane. And, I don't think she could ask the pilot to turn around. I have a retreat to go back to. So many of the, I suspect that a good percentage of the decisions we make, the things we say, the things we do that we later regret, probably have some aspect of the hindrances operating. So as we learn about them in meditation, in this kind of very special laboratory for study here, and get to know them really well, then we get to recognize them in daily life. And then we can have the upper hand. We don't have to be pulled into them. We can see them. We can see them coming. We can say, oh, that's a hindrance, as opposed to that's the truth. That's how things are. So as I continue with this kind of introduction for the hindrances, I want to introduce you to a Pali word, ancient Buddhist word, that lately has become my favorite Buddhist word. And maybe some of you, probably most of you haven't learned this word. The word is anukampa. So A-N-U-K-A-M-P-A, anukampa. And kampa means to tremble or to shake or to move. And anu means like towards something. So to, and it's, I think it's very similar to the colloquial English expression to be moved by. So to have the heart tremble or be moved by something is this anukampa. And it's the primary word used in the ancient suttas, these ancient texts, teachings of the Buddha. The primary word which represents what we think of as compassion. Whenever someone's talking about doing something out of compassion, out of care, out of concern for other people, out of kindness for other people, they use this expression out of anukampa. And what's nice about this word is that it has a broader meaning than the Brahma Viharas. It includes kindness, it includes compassion, includes loving kindness, appreciative joy. I don't know if it includes equanimity or not, but it's this active concern, active care for the welfare of others. It's not limited to only, compassion is kind of limited to wanting people to be free of suffering, but this is much more broader in meaning. It's just concern for the welfare of people, including when they suffer, and including when they're happy, and including when they're neither happy or suffering, and just because they're people, you'd be moved by them. And so here you are at this retreat. And it's hard the first day for most of us. Even sometimes, not this retreat, but sometimes I come to teach these retreats and I'm surprised even I have a headache the first day. How many of you were surprised to have a headache today? No one, not even me. Oh, a few of you, okay. How many of you were more tired than you expected today, even though I warned you? Look at that. It's impressive. How many body hurt more than you expected? How many had, more challenging emotions than you expected? Boy, you got a lot for your money. So getting more than you expect. So it's difficult the first day, and I acknowledge it, and it's part of the deal. And I remember when I was younger and would go backpacking, how difficult the first hill was. Just the beginning of the journey. So this is the beginning of the journey, and it's often difficult to get acclimatized, it's difficult to get settled. We have lost momentum from our lives. We also have a backlog of kind of emotional, psychological stuff that hasn't been processed. And so sometimes when we stop and come on retreat, it has a chance to surface and we find out, really what we're feeling and what's going on. It's not a mistake to have the first day difficult. It's just part of the deal, if that's the case. And, but it isn't just the retreat, the first day of the retreat that's difficult. I'm very aware that life is difficult. I don't think that it's an easy thing to get through this life. For some people, it's very, very difficult. Some people, it's seemingly more easy. But if you scratch under the surface or you know, look beyond the living room or something. You know, there's a lot of suffering, a lot of challenges that people have in families and work and communities and society and with health and all kinds of things. It's not easy, this life of ours. Anukampa is to be moved by that, to allow it to touch your heart, to allow to take in the fact that we're humans and we're doing the best we can, and we're trying to meet this life, hopefully, with honesty and clarity. And you do that, you're going to encounter some of the difficulties. And rather than being, pushed into the water by it, anukampa is to stay on the surfboard, but to allow yourself to feel the tenderness of the heart, the care of the heart, and be concerned for yourself and for your welfare, and to be friendly, to be kind, to be supportive for yourself, and you're trying to find your way. What anukampa is not is indulging yourself. It's not kind of like indulging then in lots of chocolate just because it's hard, or it's not kind of indulging in fantasy, or it's not indulging in blame or hostility. And it's not indulging in being, you know, you get sleepy and tired. It's not indulging in sleep. And it's not indulging or getting caught up in the agitation, the restlessness that could be here, and then you're just running around the property, you know, at full speed just because it's fun to, pleasant, enjoyable to give expression to the restlessness. So anukampa is not giving in to things and indulging, but it's also not rejecting anything. It's about bringing mindful presence to what's happening, to really see it. And so we have this acronym that's used for the practicing with hindrances. And probably through as we go through the day, we'll go talk a little bit more about each one, but I want to introduce the whole collection. And I don't think they map, you know, completely perfectly with the hindrances, but they also are five of them. And its acronym is BELLA, which is Italian for beautiful. And I like that because, you know, rather than, you know, treating the hindrances as ugly and bad, remind ourselves that we're trying to meet things with a certain kind of beauty of the mind, beauty of the heart, with our kindness, with our goodness, our compassion, with our mindfulness and clarity. And so can we draw on that? We're constantly trying to draw forth on that, trying to rely on that, take refuge in it. Find out where's that clarity, where's the knowing that can really know something and not be swept underwater by what we know. So the first letter of Bella, B, is let it be. Just let it be, the hindrance. What that means is you don't indulge in it, you don't allow it to kind of keep racing on, but you don't get into a fight with it. You're not in conflict with it, and you're not necessarily trying to get rid of it or fix it. You're also not trying not to indulge in it. But there's something very powerful about learning the skill, the ability, to be present for something and allowing it to be as it is. To see it, but allow it to be. And one of the reasons it's powerful, if you or your awareness can really see it and be present for it while you're letting it be, you're not being it. You're changing the inner ecology dramatically. Because if you're in the hindrance and caught in it, then you're kind of lost and not so useful. But if you can have enough wherewithal to step back and look it in the face, say, I see you, you're a hindrance, and I'm not going to have any problem with you. I'm not going to fight you. I'm not going to criticize you. I'm not going to criticize myself and feel bad that I have this. I'm going to step back and really recognize, see it right in the eye. Hindrance, I see you. But it's kind of, you let it be, so no conflict. And that's kind of one of the very dramatic, I think, benefits of this mindfulness practice once you get the hang of it, and once you get on the surfboard, perhaps, that there's no problems in this practice. It's just something else to be aware of, something else to see. So let it be. The E is to examine it, to study it, take a deeper look, get to know it. So you can let it be, but you want to know it well enough so that, as I said earlier, so you understand its tricks, you understand how it works, that you understand how you relate to it, how you get caught by it. There's all this kind of different stuff that you can know about the hindrances. So you kind of take, once you're able to let it be and take a good look at it, then take you know, what is this? How does it feel physically? What's the physical experience of being caught in the hindrance or being involved in the hindrance? What's going on emotionally? What's going on motivationally? What is it you want when you have a hindrance? So you're kind of looking and studying them. The first L of Bella is to lessen its intensity. Find some way to relax. Because sometimes these hindrances are quite powerful. And desire and ill will can just kind of really take us over. And it's hard sometimes to put them down. And so sometimes it really helps. You know, once you've kind of seen it and looked at it in the eye and kind of let it be and kind of examine it for a while, then you might, not to get rid of it, not to, you know, to see it as a problem, but is there some simple way that you can lessen its intensity? So physically relaxing can help. Sometimes I found with certain hindrances, doing more walking meditation has been helpful for me, especially faster walking meditation. Sometimes doing something like loving kindness practice as an antidote can lessen intensity. Sometimes doing a concentration practice and just spending some, maybe 10, 15 minutes, really trying to stay on the breathing. And so there's not enough room for the mind to get involved in the hindrance because you're really trying to stay. You might try to see if you can reframe how you understand the hindrances. If you see, if you're alarmed by it, or if you're upset with yourself for having a hindrance, that's kind of debilitating. It kind of deflates us. But if you see the hindrance as maybe as a tip of an iceberg, kind of, it's just a tip of what's showing, and maybe underneath, you know, the water of that iceberg, maybe there's actually something healthy going on. Maybe there's layers and layers within you. And so the hindrances aren't necessarily a problem. Maybe it's just a dysfunctional way in which something really important is trying to happen and to be recognized. So if you have that attitude, that might lessen intensity. You're not so swept up or you don't believe it so much. You say, oh, it's just a symptom. The hindrances are just a symptom. Or they're a doorway to go into some further depth of myself. Let me stay here and feel it as if it's, you know, just the tip of the iceberg. Let me feel the rest of it. And that kind of attitude, as opposed to it's a problem and I'm terrible for having it, maybe it lightens the mood, lightens your relationship, lessens the intensity of it. So consider how you can lessen it. Then the next L is to let it go. There are times when it's useful to just let it go. You know, you don't have to, if it's not that strong, if it's, you see it clearly, you have enough wisdom, I can say enough already. I let go of those thoughts, let those concerns, let go. And one of the interesting questions around the hindrances, once you kind of get into the letting go phase, is to consider what needs to be let go. What has to be letting go of? Like, for example, with sloth and torpor, it's very easy to interpret sloth and torpor as a tiredness. But it's actually not tiredness. Tiredness is a biological thing, to be tired. Sloth and torpor is more like resistance. It's more like you're resisting what's happening. You don't want to deal with it. You're shutting down. You see it in kids especially. You know, you can see it. I saw it in my kids that they had amazing capacity to be tired when things were not to their liking. And, you know, I'm too tired. Oh, you know, their whole physiology would change. And, you know, they would get into it. Some, you know, they really got into this being tired when they didn't want something. You know, they would fall to the floor. And they could do it well, my kids. And, but then you say something like, you know, should we go get some ice cream? You know, suddenly they were like, you know, the energy bunny. You know, they were like, let's go. And then, Dad, you're too slow. Come. You know, there's no problem with energy. So, you know, we have this capacity of resisting and deflating ourselves or giving up that have more to do with our psychology than anything physiological. And so what needs to be let go of? Is it the resistance? Is it the meaning making? Sometimes we make the whole story, this means that, and then we have, you know, it deflates us. Or, you know, we have this idea, I can't do this. And so that's can be, you know, maybe that has to let go of, and for the sloth and torpor to kind of be released. So to let go. And the last thing is to, when it should happen, that whatever hindrance you're working with is no longer there, appreciate that. Take some time to recognize what it's like when it's gone. Because there's something about the recognition, the knowing, the visceral memory of the absence of a hindrance, which becomes like a North Star, or becomes a reminder, or becomes like you can find your way to that easier if you know what physiologically it feels like. Mentally, physically, what does it feel like then to be have that particular hindrance lift or dissipate or not be there? Is there more clarity of the mind? Is there more energy? Is there more relaxation? Is there more, you know, alertness? What, you know, just feel it and know what it's like. So, you know, we can do these different things. Let it be, examine, lesson, let go, and appreciate. We can also just do plain old mindfulness. Just recognize it, that it's there. And then this thing that I talked about, this anukampa, sometimes it's translated as compassion, sometimes as a kind of a caring empathy. One scholar I know was suggesting that this should be translated as to care. What is it like, so the hindrance, you're caught in the hindrances, what is it like not to be alarmed or seen as a problem, but to care for yourself in that context, to have care? This is difficult. Here is a hindrance. This is a problem which many, all human beings have. And maybe I can try to address it and not get, you know, drowned in the ocean of the hindrance. Let me stay on the surfboard. But maybe with a kind of sense of kindness, care, love, compassion, not just for yourself, but for others as well, that this is a task, this is a fundamental human task, to try to understand how not to get caught in the hindrances, and how not to have the hindrances drive us and influence us. If we can learn something about how to do that, how to be free of them, we're doing this for other people as well. Other people then don't have to be the recipient of our hindrance-driven life, but also it might inspire other people and show people what's possible, that it's possible to not be caught in these hindrances and be with them. So, so then to think about a little bit more, take it to a different level of the hindrances. You know, so the hindrances will arise for you on the retreat sooner or later. And or sooner and later. And then the question is, what is your relationship to them? That's also the secondary layer. How are you relating to them? Because it turns out that you can relate to the hindrances through the hindrances. So when I had this strong 3 days of desire, I started to have a lot of ill will towards myself and towards those thoughts. And I got, for a while, I got caught up in the ill will, this strange dance between the desire and the ill will, kind of going back and forth. It's possible to have strong desire and then to really want something else, want the chocolate, or to, you know, and be, it's possible to have a strong desire, you know, frustrated desire, for example, have the desire of strong sensual desire for something. And then after a while you realize it's frustrated, you can't get what you want. And so one relationship to that is to give up, and sloth and torpor comes in. Or one relationship is to get angry, and ill will comes in. One reaction would be to be restless. The hindrances are there, and this must be terrible and bad. I need to know what to do. And we run around kind of, you know, frantically energized by it because we're upset. Or the last hindrance, doubt, sometimes it's said that's the most dangerous of the doubts. Maybe because, like Sylvia, you might leave the retreat or leave the practice. And so a hindrance might arise, and then the reaction to that is to have doubt. You know, this shouldn't be happening now. Did I choose the right retreat? Is this the right practice? I have doubts about my ability. I have doubts about what to do. Gil gave his crazy idea of 5 different things for Bella. I don't know which one I should do. Should I try B or E or L or L or A or, you know, all of them? You know, I think I have a multiple hindrance attack. Maybe I need to do the multiple Bella thing. And you know, what should it be? And, you know, and maybe I should go, you know, maybe I should just go get chocolate. And so, you know, just doubt and not knowing what to do. So sometimes it's when these hindrances arise, it's useful to kind of always step back and try to get the bird's eye view. Step back and what's going on here? What's happening here? And sometimes that secondary reaction, which is really where the work is, an interesting work. And sometimes people will have something difficult arise and they think they're supposed to, let's say X happens. And so we're looking at X. That's what we think the task is. But where the challenge is not X, but is our relationship to X. So sometimes you want to step back and open up, how am I relating to this? Is this really, you know, do I have a hindrance? Do I have hindrance attack about the hindrances that have come up? So just, you know, see that. So the last thing I'm thinking about saying here, maybe another analogy, and that is that I grew up in places that had back, they probably still have it, on the road they had these cattle guards. And so they had, you know, fence, the pastures were fenced in, but there was a road that went through the pasture for a car. And you couldn't just have a gate for the cars. So, but they'd have these cattle guards, you know, these long metal bars or wooden bars some places, that went across with the, you know, long, you know, perpendicular to the road with a gap between them. And the car drives over just fine. But I guess these little hoofs of the cows, they couldn't really manage with those round grates, and they would slip in, or they would see the hole, and so just they would didn't have enough sense not to step on there. And so they would stop and not go through. And don't let the hindrances be your cow grate. Don't stop because of them. The art of mindfulness practice is the continuity of practice. The continuity of knowing what's happening now. And now. And now. Oops, there's a hindrance. I'm really bad. I shouldn't have done that. I hope no one noticed. You've left. Now, thinking. Now, criticizing. Oh, now, back to the hindrance. Now, back to the breath. Now, hearing a sound. Now, just kind of stay in that, kind of catch the wave of the present moment, and try to stay there. One of the useful ideas for me is the idea that not to have any retrospective thinking when you do the mindfulness practice. There's no need to think about just what happened. The present moment is amazingly forgiving. The present moment doesn't care what happened a minute ago, an hour ago, a second ago. And like the present moment, let your awareness be like the present moment that doesn't care what happened before, two seconds ago. Just show up for this. Be with this. And when the hindrances arise, that's a time to really kind of maybe gear up in some gentle way. Just stay in the knowing. Desire. This is desire. And maybe you have to say it a little bit more emphatically or recognize it more emphatically. This is desire. Desire is happening. Until the desire is clear enough about the desire that you're not caught in its web, you've kind of managed to pull yourself out. It's desire. And a great label, if you're able to do it, is just say to yourself, it's just desire. You can't say that when you're in the thick of it, but start recognize desire. Oh, just desire. It's just ill will. It's just doubt. So stay in the present moment. Just keep walking. Keep driving. Keep going. Don't stop for these five hindrances. Don't stop for the cow grates. Your legs, your feet are big enough. Your mindfulness is big enough to step right on top of that grate and keep going. Just stay noticing. And that's a lot of the what we're learning to get faith in and take refuge in and develop the capacity to do is just kind of stay. And once you get the hang of that and kind of catch that wave, then the hindrances no longer become hindering. They just become phenomena, just desire, but they don't stop us. But if we kind of go down the route of any of the hindrances, then they can be deflating. They take our vitality away in the end. Or the vitality they do give, like ill will and desire, can give a certain kind of vitality that some people get addicted to. The vitality that gets to is not really healthy to have that vitality. It's a healthy vitality. We kind of maintain it if we don't succumb to these hindrances that go down. An ancient analogy for this is a river that's flowing, and then the farmers begin making canals to divert some of the water into the fields. And if you go down the river and if enough farmers are diverting water, eventually downstream the river runs dry. And so the hindrances are, in that ancient analogy, hindrances are these detours for your vitality. And they start draining the stream of your life. Staying in the stream of the present moment, just now, here, this experience. Being careful to notice how the thinking takes us out of that moment. Takes us out of recognizing this moment, thinking, hearing, sensing a thought, an itch, a movement. Just stay with it. And this first day, we're doing a lot with just keeping it simple, with the breath as you breathe and the steps of your feet as you walk. This inhalation, this exhalation, this movement of the torso, this lifting of the belly or the chest, this falling of it as you exhale, this movement of pressure and tautness, this release and pulling in, just this. And as you do it, just the moment, and periodically, you'll be sidetracked. You'll have a canal. Farmers build a canal. And then, you know, you'll be pulled into the desire. You'll be pulled into ill will. You'll be pulled into sloth and torpor, pulled into restlessness, regrets, worries, and pulled into doubt. Get yourself back in the mainstream. Show up on the surfboard. Come back to the knowing. Come back to recognizing, oh, this is what's happening now. This is what's happening now. Just here. Just now. Here. Now. And for those of you who might be kind of new to all this, one of the ways to kind of build momentum of staying in the present moment, to kind of support that part of that capacity of the mind to grow, is don't just do that when you're sitting or walking meditation. Do it all the time. You're walking down the steps, when you're walking across the community room, if you're going to a meal, standing in line. Play around with, experiment. Just stay in the present moment now. Now, now. See if you can begin to appreciate how amazingly forgiving the present moment is. The present moment has no problems with you. And your awareness of the present moment can share in that way of being, that your present moment awareness has no problems with you either. Your present moment awareness doesn't have problems with anything. All it does, it just knows what's here. It allows it to arise. To be. And I'll end with maybe I don't know if it's a useful analogy, but it also comes from the Buddha. Once he waved his hand through the air, and he said, you see, there's no obstacles, nothing interferes with the hand moving in the empty space. There's something about the present moment in the purity or simplicity of the present moment that doesn't interfere with anything. There's something about the clarity of present moment awareness, just the simplicity of present moment awareness, that doesn't interfere. Things that arise in it, in awareness, nothing interferes with it. It doesn't touch anything. It just kind of moves through like hand in empty space. There's no problems in this, in the radical simplicity of just now, just now. And if you have problems, take a good look and see if the hindrances are operating. If you're not able to stay in the present, the flow of the present moment, which you know you won't many times, but when you notice that's not happening, check it out and see, are the any of the five hindrances operating? Sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. And if they are, make them the subject of practice. Make them the place where you wake up. So they're not the problem, but they become the meditation. So thank you for your practice so far this day, and I don't... I don't take it for granted that people do this practice. I don't assume that it's easy. And I have a lot of admiration for people who are engaged in this process. And it's really worthwhile what you're doing. Boy, is it worthwhile. And we're at the beginning of the journey. Thank you.